Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Hi guys, welcome to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. Now this week's episode, as you would see by the thumbnail or the description before you clicked on it, is going to be about a character in musical history who can be polarizing. He can cause all sorts of fuss and bother amongst music fans of the world, whichever form of music you choose to listen to. Someone out there, or everyone will have an opinion which could be right, but is usually mainly wrong. But the opinions are formed not by informed information or understanding of the person, the background, and the life they led, just on the media of which it's, they derive their information that's stuffed down their throats incorrectly 99% of the time. The person we're talking about here is Mr. John Simon Ritchie, who later became John Simon Beverley, Mr. Sid Vicious, or Sidney Vicious, as John Lydon used to call him. Born on the 10th of May 1957, and he died on the 2nd of Feb 1979 at the age of 21 years old. So he was a really, you know, in modern standards, he was a child. Back then at 21, you were pretty much a man doing your thing. But now you imagine you look at all your 21s that you know, and they would be, you would consider them, but a handful, children, right? You really would. They're not mature enough. But the sort of different thing back then, back in the 50s and 60s and the 70s. Anyway, he embodied everything that the rock and roll is. But we'll get to that in a minute. Just going to give you a quick potted life story. Now, I won't go into the did he or didn't he kill Nancy Spungen. I'm not going to go that far. I don't need to go into that. This isn't a conspiracy theory podcast. This is just going to be a little bit of a potted history of Sid, aka John, and what he means to me, what he means to music, and I'd like to right some wrongs that have been pushed upon him over time. I mean, his anniversary of his birth is coming up soon, and he'd be 60-ish, you know what I mean? So think of Sid growing up. Pretty amazing, wouldn't he, to think of him as an older man. But hey, the spirit of rock and roll is eternal. So anyway, he was once considered the embodiment of punk, everything that is dark, discordant, and nihilistic. A quote about Sid, and I think that is beautiful. Born in Lewisham to John and Richie, Nee MacDonald, later named after Beverly, 1936 to 1996. That was his mum. So she died in 1996. Same age as my dad. actually. He was born in 36 as well. Anne dropped out of school and joined the army, where she met Sid's dad, a guardsman in the Buckingham Palace, and a semi-professional jazz trombone player, who shortly left after Sid's birth. Mum and Dad moved to Ibiza in Spain, where they thought Dad would join them, but he left them there high and dry. What a bastard. And to get by, there was, had to sell marijuana to keep herself and her family alive. And, you know, can't look on her in a bad way in that respect. This has had to be done. She got help from the British Embassy, but got her back to the UK, where she married a Christopher Beverly, a.k.a. the reason why that John became John Beverly after his father just up and leaving, who died 6 months later of kidney failure. So really sort of up and down life, right? John moved to Tunbridge. John and his mum moved to Tunbridge, Wales, from 1965 to 1971. And in 1971, the pair moved to Stoke Newington, Hackney, in the East End. It was here that John started using his name John Beverly. So it was around about the early 70s that he became John Beverly. And by 1973, Anne's life was consumed by her heroin addiction. She was so out of it that she did not even know that John was doing a night class to get his O levels. See, all right, I'm just gonna put a pencil mark in this section here, okay? Because he had learning difficulties, okay? Now, straight away, is this the monster that the media would like to portray? Or, to be honest, Malcolm McLaren, I don't think Vivian Westwood was involved in that, but Malcolm particularly, would portray to the world. So now, instead of you thinking of a young man from a rather tough post-war upbringing, with a mother with an addiction and a father left him and another father who died very soon after becoming his father, and with the learning difficulties and trying to make better of himself at night school, is that the image of an evil, nasty, beatnik from the other side of town that would just want to mug your granny? No, it's not. Not at all. So, you know, when you're looking at the packet, don't always believe what it says on the back, right? Anyway, a book isn't, don't judge a book by its cover, as the saying goes. We'll move on. He'd already, by this time, had mentioned that he had suicidal thoughts. This alone is something that is not to be overlooked. We all know and all have people in our lives touched with the dreaded black hand of suicide. And in the UK, it's the biggest killer of men in their mid to early 40s, early to mid 40s. So, not something we're not all touched by. And if you are listening to this and are struggling, please do reach out to whoever you can. I know it's superficial of me to say it, because I don't know you personally, but I know the struggle that you're going through. And so there's always someone to look out for, unfortunately, to get help from. Unfortunately, John didn't have that help, didn't have that touch point. A highly artistic, music-loving boy that wanted to educate himself to get away beyond the bonds and away from the issues that his mother had put, his accident of birth had given him. And at the age of 16, he was kicked out of home. And in 1973, he went and met fellow Kingsway student, and that's where he was doing his O-levels, John Lydon, who introduced him to the gang of Johns, John Wardle, who had become Jarwobble. He became Jarwobble because Sid was drunk and couldn't say John Wardle, so just Jarwobble. So that's why he became John Jarwobble. John Gray, John Gray, and then there's another John, but I didn't write that down. They all lived in a squat. in very terrible squats over the East End of London. You know, John would get you the names. Now, interesting here, John got the nickname Sid Vicious. People think from John Lydon's hamster, Sid, but actually there are rumours that it was after Sid Barrett, because actually, too many actually's in a sentence there. John, aka Sid, was a big Sid Barrett fan, big Pink Floyd fan, loved T-Rex. You know, there's lots of shots. I've got almost every book ever written about Sid in my collection, and there are a lot of photographs of him in a leather jacket, a long silk scarf, tight curly perm. He looks just like he's just come out from a T-Rex gig. He liked David Bowie. He liked avant-garde art. And I think, again, this is something that is, something that is sort of forgotten about, right? It's all overlooked, because it's good to demonize people rather than, rather than praise them or give them some... A bad person or a baddie is someone that's easy to attain to, right? It's someone you can easily understand. One second. Sorry, I had the mix on weirdly. It's someone you can, hiss and boo at. You could become a comedy villain, a pantomime villain, a James Bond villain, a nasty. It's much more fun to hate than to love in a lot of aspects of life. And so easy to portray him as someone ignorant, stupid, uneducated, violent. Yes, he did become violent, and yes, he was violent. We'll talk about that later on, but that's circumstances beyond his control. He then sort of met, he would start hanging down at the sex shop on King's Road in Chelsea. And that's where my brother used to hang around, actually. I've got memories of my brother telling me stories about him hanging around down there and stealing shirts from the store. And I think I still have one somewhere tucked away in my collection. Don't tell anyone. Anyway, there he met Chrissie Hynde, where she tried to persuade him to marry him. Chrissie Hynde of the Pretenders, that is. The wonderful Pretenders, I love them. Brass in Pocket is brilliant, brilliant, brilliant single. Try to get to marry him so she could get a work permit. He obviously turned her down. But, if you watch the rather terrible Steve Jones biopic that came out recently, a lot of it's complete and utter hokum. And, John liked it. Steve really enjoyed it. I'm not convinced. There's some stuff in there that doesn't marry with any of the other biographies that had come out, unless this stuff is, of course, new that wasn't put in biographies, but I highly doubt that. At that same time, both Sid and John, were busking in underground train stations. John would be singing and using a violin, and Sid would be banging a tambourine, and people would pay them to stop singing, which is, they would do Alice Cooper covers, which is quite apt, because that's how John Lydon got his singing spot with the Pistols. That he sang 18, a jukebox at the Roebuck in a pub in the King's Road. But you can see what I'm saying. So, obviously, that's a very potted history. There's a lot more happened to him, ins and outs. There's, stories of him being a rent boy, which is, for those that don't know, a male prostitute. He clearly dabbled with drugs quite a bit due to the influence of his mother. He's a child, of a post-war child. If you think that punk would only ever happen in that time in history, particularly in the UK, because of the the economic and social confines and structures that was happening. This is post-war. It's 20-odd years, maybe 30 years after the after a major conflict that lost the lives of many people and changed the whole aspect of life and community, particularly a European community. And so, you know, he's a boy from a broken home in a time where education was not something of priority to the state. Their priority was to build the pound back up, to have trade, good trade, take control away from the unions, because the unions were getting more and more power. And by doing so, boys like John slipped through the cracks. They slipped through the cracks in, and John, would, aka said, would not be the only one this would happen to. This would happen to many people. In fact, I, without being too giving too much away, it happened in my own family. I've seen it with my own eyes, and I'm still seeing it with my own eyes. Now, he chose to try and change his life. He chose to move on. But then you get battered down by, you know, he wanted to, if he had his mum not kicked him out at 16 and he had finished his O-levels, who knows what he would have done. Now, we wouldn't be talking about him here, and he wouldn't be fulfilling his destiny, as we will talk about in the second part. But he would have made a life of himself. He was clearly musically inclined. He clearly loved the arts. Who knows where we would have gone? But, you know, he burnt brightly. He burnt so bright and so fast that he could never keep up with it. His spirit was so intense and so creative and so individual that it was never meant to last more than he did. At 21, it's probably the apt age for him. I mean, he passed away from an overdose of heroin, because after his conviction of murdering Nancy Spungen in a hotel room in Chelsea, in the Chelsea Hotel in New York and Queens, he went to Rikers Island. He'd been there before, but it's the second time he went. He went to Rikers Island, and they got out on bail, and at a party. I mean, he'd done so much heroin. You know, he'd got hepatitis B, was really sick. He did so much heroin that when in prison, he cleaned himself up. Very tough, but he got himself clean. Now, when then you go to a party and someone gives you the same drug again, you don't have the tolerances that you did, say, 6 months previous, a year previous. And so when he's, apparently his mum gave him the heroin, and he promptly put it in his veins, and unfortunately his body couldn't take the amount that he put in, because he had no tolerance anymore. And that was the end of Sid, sadly. And to be really honest, the end of punk. That day in February is the day that punk died. You know that classic song, The Day the Music Died? Well, I'm sorry, but the 2nd of February 1979, punk died. It was over, finished, gone, done. As a valid medium, as a valid musical form, as a valid social movement, it was gone. In a blink of an eye, one injection of a needle, 2 seconds to put it in the veins, and the whole thing was gone. Now, you're going to say, why do you say that, Tony? Well, I'm going to pause now for a little drink, and I'll come back, and we'll talk to more about why punk died when he died, and what actually he means to us all. Anyway, see you on the other side. Bye for now.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome back to part two of the show. Sid Vicious, what does he mean? So, as I said in the first part, quick product history, life, you know, where he could have gone, why he was demonized. Now, you know, there are people who are saying, if they've listened this far in the show, and I hope you have, they're going to say, look, Tony, but he couldn't play his guitar, he couldn't play his bass, he was just violent, he just was a show pony, a jacket wearing mannequin. And I'm going to look at you and I'm going to look you dead in the eyes. Everyone that's looking at me now, right now, at the speaker of their phone or the speaker of their stereo, and I'm looking right in your eyes and I'm saying, you are wrong. You are dead wrong. He was the spirit of rock and roll. Truly and will always be the spirit of rock and roll. Every one of us out there, every musician, every music lover out there, whether you like prog, whether you like blues, jazz, rock and roll, hip hop, heavy metal, whatever you choose to enjoy, it all stems from the spark of rock and roll, like the spark of life at the beginning of the universe. It all starts with the spark of rock and roll, and that rock and roll is a flame, and that flame is extremely bright. It's extremely hot. It burns brightly, and so brightly in some that they cannot survive its inferno. And this is what Sid had in him. He had all life's shit kicked at him. You know, every time he got up, he got kicked back down. Every time he got up, someone spat at him. But you know what? He didn't let go of that spark of rock and roll, that music in his soul. Yeah, so he played a couple of notes on a couple of on one of the tracks on Nevermind the Bollocks. So he wasn't the world's greatest bass player, but he sat down and he learned and he played and he played and he played and he played until his fingers bled. Ramones covers continuously. So had he been given that chance, had he not pumped his veins full of horrendous life-changing fluids, then he may have been something special. But not just that, he could sing. If you ever listen to any of the live music that he did, not My Way, he just did that as a joke, okay? But if you listen to the live stuff like Sid Sings or Rotten Kids at the Electric Ballroom, like that sort of stuff that he did with Glenn Matlock and Steve New and all those people, and the guys from The Clash. He could really sing, but he also, it's the reason why I have him tattooed on my back. I've got a big tattoo of Sid on my back, and people do look at me and think that's a bit odd, right? And I don't think it is. If I want to put a badge, a true image, if I was in my mind to close my eyes and go, what's an image of the true spirit of rock and roll, it would be Sid Vicious. Why? Because it wasn't about the fucking music. It wasn't about how many wonderful notes in a bar he could play, his arpeggio speed, his the strange Beatles chords that could be constructed around him. Nothing to do with that. It was about pure and utter energy and passion. And when he focused that energy and that passion for those moments that he was alive on that, on the stage, he was rock and roll. And it really bugs me when people get snobby and say, but he couldn't play his guitar. He didn't have to. He was living in a time when bass guitars, apart from some of the more inventive punk bass players like Charwobble and JJ Brunel and you know, they were just one octave below, thumping away, giving the rhythm section something to hook into, right? But that didn't matter. He had this persona on the stage, this air of menace and this air of I don't give a fuck and I don't care a damn and I don't want to you to tell me and put me into brackets. I'm going to play rock and roll, because that's really all it was. That's all punk is. It's just rock and roll. It's just another way of packaging rock and roll. You know, had Sid been around when Chuck Berry was at his height, then people would say he's just another, you know, he's the spirit of rock. Chuck Berry, another one, spirit of rock and roll. Okay, Elvis, I'm not a massive Elvis fan, by no means, but you understand, I feel as passionately about Sid as people do about Elvis. Yes, Elvis was a better musician. Yes, he could play the guitar. Yes, he could sing beautifully. But that's not a barrier. That shouldn't be a barrier to being, having the flame of rock and roll in you, and he had that. You know, inventing the pogo, you know, he couldn't see the bands in front, so he just jumped up and down. And by doing so, invented a whole dance move just because he's trying to see the bands. I mean, he played drums for the at the 100 Club during the punk festival there for Susie and the Banshees. You know, he was in a band called Flowers of Romance they tried to put together with, you know, the guys from Susie and some from the Pistols. It wasn't about trying to make millions of pounds and be uber famous. It was about getting out from the gutter and being something, fulfilling your potential. Now, his potential is probably like everyone on this planet is limitless. But he had, like a lot of people, barriers. And those barriers, they pushed those potentials further and further back. And by doing that, he had to be more and more inventive to get his potential across. Now, yes, he liked a bit of violence. Yes, but he played up on it. He was a big pussycat. Yeah, he had a flick knife. Yeah, he carried a bike chain. Yeah, he'd punch a few people. But this, I think, was manufactured quite heavily by Malcolm during that time. I think it was heavily manufactured by the press, because the, you know, there's a classic one of the interviews they had, and John was saying, you know, that these paparazzi would be going, oh, I've just interviewed the Pistols. How many shits and fucks did you get? Right? Because, you know, this was a time when TV, you didn't have swearing on TV. Nudity was very rare. Violence was on the low point because we were coming. It was the era of light entertainment. You know, when number one hits were like The Seekers and, Carpenters and, the Captain and Tennille, people like that. You know, because the people buying records at that point were not teenagers. The people buying records at that point were your mum and dad or your uncle and aunt because they owned the stereo. They bought what they wanted on it. They usually they're sort of big Terry Wogan fans. Those in the UK understand what I'm saying. They liked light entertainment programs like Morecambe and Wise, where there would be a musical interlude halfway through. Usually some kind of like Demis Roussos or something, you know, Save My Love, My Darling, Save My Love, all that kind of stuff. Nana Mouskouri. So then suddenly in the late 60s, early 70s, the teenager arrived. People say the 50s, and I don't believe that at all. It's definitely the 60s and 70s. The teenager arrived, and the earning capacity of teenagers arrived, and money in their pocket arrived, and they want to spend it the way they want to spend it on the records they want. And, you know, yes, a lot of it probably would have gone the same way as their parents because monkey see, monkey do. But a great deal of it wanted to be piss their parents off, be rebellious, as what every single person on this planet at a certain age in life has wanted to do. I know you can look at me and tell me you never did and I won't believe you. And Sid was one of those people. You know, suddenly he had access to really interesting, gender fluid musical, you know, like Bowie and they said T-Rex and, you know, Floyd, you know, doing all their sort of nonsense on their keyboards and their smoke machines and their wah pedals, you know. I mean, Hendrix wasn't that far just gone. Cream, you know, didn't really, only in a, you know, matter of years before had released Disraeli Gears. You know, Syd Barrett, the Madcap Laughs. I mean, these things had been released. And, you know, and of course, then across the water, across the ocean, the Americans were making a fun, energetic, crazy, butchered bastardization of rock and roll, like with the Ramones and the New York Dolls and Richard Hell and the Voivoids and all that stuff coming out. And influencing the teenagers who had access to magazines and record stores that could get these strange and rare records in. And Sid, John, would be one of those people. And he hooked into something that was different. Something about the punk movement, and the individual nihilism, the peacocking, the fluid gender sexuality of the movement really hooked him and set fire to that flame of rock and roll. And for me, I'm glad it did. So when everyone says, hey, nah, he couldn't play his instrument, I don't, you know, oh, he, you know, he punk ruined music. No, it didn't. Not one instant did it ruin music. If it ruined music, you wouldn't be sitting to heavy metal, listening to heavy metal now. You possibly wouldn't be listening to me. You wouldn't be going out. All you'd be hearing is three chord punk. And that is not the truth. Because, yes, we now live in a time where pop music itself is vacuous, poorly made, badly written, poorly produced, over-popularized and sickly sweet and awful. Yes, we are living that time, but that would have come punk or not. What Sid and his cohorts managed to do was set free the world of music, because without punk we would all be living in, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love prog music and big bands, but you wouldn't be going to small clubs watching small bands. It'd all be in arenas. It'd all be huge symphonic pieces of music, which is, as I said, wonderful. I love it. You know that. But there is also a time for other things, and it's not always the most accessible. And punk and Sid and the Pistols, more so than any of them, was the most, you know, very accessible because they weren't, you know, if you listen to the lyrics of Nevermind the Bollocks, and I've mentioned this and I've talked about it before, actually quite positive in their negativity. And that's what I find beautiful about Sid, is that he was positive in a negative sort of way. Now, he unfortunately fell in love, if that's the right word, with the wrong person. It happens to all of us, doesn't it? She introduced him even to more drugs. He'd already was introduced to by his mother anyway. This wasn't new to him. But what it did, it took a vibrant and spark-filled human, a man of energy, passion, fun, and creativity, and it crippled him and squashed him into the corner of history. Now he's remembered as this drug-filled idiot who couldn't play his instrument, who supposedly killed his girlfriend and then died of an overdose. Now, there are people that say, hey man, how rock and roll is that? And that is the truth. See, this is where I come to. When someone says, how rock and roll is that? The image of Sid appears. It should appear. It really should. That's how rock and roll that is. You know, not chucking a TV out of a bedroom window and crashing your Rolls Royce into a swimming pool. Where they are fantastic moments in rock and roll. They're not. I wouldn't call that rock and roll, man. Right? I call getting on stage with absolutely no real ability. And he didn't know he wasn't plugged in. He thought every single moment that he hit those notes that he was playing, he didn't know that he wasn't plugged in. He didn't know that he wasn't on, you know, all of the bass parts of Nevermind the Bollocks. You know, he also, you know, he didn't know that. He wrote, he was a clever and intelligent person. He wrote some very interesting lyrics. I mean, grant you, Belson Was a Gas is a horrendous song lyrically, but it is also a statement on the nihilistic and stupidity of anti-Semitism. He didn't wear that swastika because he was a Nazi. He wore it to shock. All right, because for him to shock was a way of being different, a way of standing out. He was no longer, you know, a dull queue fodder, right? He wasn't on benefit corner. He didn't just blend into the background with all those other unemployed post-war 20-something nothings that were filling up the job centres and the pubs and the parks and the you know, of Britain up and down. No, his shock, his ability to shock, and of course he was a beautiful man. Let's not take it away from him. He's a very good looking young man. He had star potential all over him. He was and still is a sex symbol. I know that that might shock some people, but he is and always will be a sex symbol. And why do I latch on to him more so than anyone else in the band? I love John Lydon, but why do I latch on to Sid? I think because I see my life very much in the same way as him. Not, of course, as dramatic as his, but I do know what it's like to come from a tough background. I do know what it's like to, in your mind, want to be the best musician there is, and not understanding that, not being given the opportunities to have that, to know that. Some people are gifted automatically, pick guitar up and away you go, right? Others have to work bloody hard at it. And I know I have, and Sid did as well. He tried, he really did. But, you know, having no parental guidance, looking up to people like John Lydon and Malcolm, in to some respect, as family figures, is not the most advisable thing to do. John, okay, but Malcolm, no. Malcolm, for all of his abilities, he was a shyster. Now, that's a very horrible word to say. If you know what it means, look it up. It's not a nice word. It's one of my least favorite words in all the world, but he was a shyster, okay? He was a man that says he had morals, says he had scruples, but really, unless there was a dollar bill attached to it, he didn't. Yes, he and his family actually come from down the road near me. They were, his mum and dad lived at Church End, which is not far from where I grew up. In fact, 15-minute walk from my house. You know, a rag trade man, a Jewish man of the rag trade, which was what a lot of the Jewish faith did. And then in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, in tailoring, and he, you know, very good at his job, very good at his at what he did at creating shock and awe, but at the same time, not the best role model. And unfortunately for Sid, they fed, or he particularly, fed the young man with that, with a sort of a melange of you are the greatest, you're a superstar, you're a sex symbol, you're above them, here, take these drugs, here, sell lots of records, here, sell my clothes. And stole away from him his ability to make his own decisions, and he didn't in the end. I mean, so addled with you know, speed and heroin and whatever he could put in him, with all this money flying around. I mean, when the Pistols broke up and he was doing, you know, his solo stuff, you know, being managed by Nancy is not a wise move. When every dollar that was coming into one hand was being given over to a dealer in the other. Now, as I said, I don't want to get into the who killed. Did he kill Nancy? Did he not kill Nancy? I'm not interested. There's too much. No one will ever know, and there's too much information. And where I stand is, I'd rather think he didn't. He was drugged. I don't think he had it in him. To push a knife into someone takes a lot of effort. You may think it's not, but it takes a lot of effort, a lot of physical strength. And unfortunately, he didn't have that in him. If he was so smacked, how was he going to do that? Anyway, that aside, spirit of rock and roll, yes. Is he everyone's spirit of rock and roll? No. Should he be? Yes. Because is it not true that rock and roll is about passion, about movement, about energy, about spirit? It's not, as I said before, how many bloody instruments you can play, how wonderful you are on this particular instrument. That's not rock and roll. That itself is just a mechanical process that you have mastered. It's a numerical process that you have mastered with your brain to your hand, and your hand to your instrument. Okay, some people master it better than others. Okay, some people don't. That's not rock and roll. Rock and roll is the spark that makes you pick that guitar up. It makes you sit behind that kit, makes you buy that record, makes you think of that lyric. That is rock and roll. And that's what Sid was. Sid is that spark. He didn't care that he couldn't play his instrument proficiently. He just wanted to get up there and make a noise and be part of something that was more important than day jobs, marketing, fashion. It was just about making people move and the energy within the room. And I said it before and I'll say it again, rock and roll keeps me young. Going to a gig, whether it be the quietest gig in the world or the loudest gig in the world, I always come away thinking I'm 21 again. Now I'm 51, so, you know, I'm no child, but I feel young. And I think that spirit of Sid is why I feel young, because it's always with me. It's always there, whether it be some intricate folk music like Jethro Tull, some extraordinary virtuosity on guitar like Steve Vai, you know, extreme black metal like Marduk or something like that. There's the spirit of rock and roll is always there. And without it, and like without the spirit of the blues, without those two things, I wouldn't be doing this podcast. You wouldn't be listening to Iron Maiden, Megadeth, Jethro Tull, Pink Floyd, whoever. You name it, you pick it, right? You just wouldn't be, because that spirit needs to be there, fired within you. Now, you might say, Tony, is that a case for everyone? No, not everyone. Not everyone is touched by the spark of rock and roll, but people enjoy the byproduct, right? They like the feel of it, listen to it, the movement of it. But the wonderful thing about this thing is that that spark could jump at any time and ignite your soul any time. And any time you could be another Sid Vicious. And I don't mean that in the nihilistic, dark, self-destructive way. I mean in the white heat of the passion of music. I feel very passionate about this, guys. I really genuinely do. I don't know if I've got this across as well as I'd like to. Sometimes in writing these shows or writing notes, because these are all ad lib, I just write notes and go from the notes. By thinking about it, sometimes I can't put across in words quite just what it means. But he genuinely does. And when I get very, very guarded and very annoyed when people treat him and his memory and what he meant in such poor fashion, you know, he's demonized. He should be canonized, right? Don't look beyond the minor things, the minor scuffles outside of gigs, the heroin usage. I mean, that's sort of beyond him. That wasn't, yeah, he could have turned around and said no, but he's of a type where he already had suicidal tendencies, as we had spoken before. And so he's in a place where he's extremely depressed, extremely unhappy. He's got everything he wants. He's now on stage in a band, looked at by the world, admired by millions, hated by millions. He's that juxtaposition, right, in this band. He looks good, he's admired, he's loved, he's lusted after, yet he's empty because of his family upbringing and this stupid connection he had with a woman that he clearly loved. I can't say that she loved him, I can't make that comment. But he clearly loved her because she gave him everything he wasn't getting. He was getting attention, female attention, you know, sexual, yes, but also I think he was mothered slightly by her, which he missed from his mum, Anne. So he's quite sad. Like a lot of great comedians, they're very, very, very depressed and sad people. So a bit of an act. But the act that he portrayed on stage in the leather jacket, and the cut marks and the nihilism and the sneer and the spitting and the chains and the aggression given to him by his name. It was just a cover up for a soft, quiet, unassuming boy who liked art and music and creativity and wasn't given that opportunity. And when he was given the opportunity, it was in such a fast and furious way that he couldn't control it. So, Rick, some you're thinking of Sid, and you think that he's this untalented, you know, puppet of Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood. Think again. Because if anything, really, Malcolm McLaren was a puppet of Sid. If anything, really. It's the other way around. I think the band controlled more him than they than he controlled them. And that more than they'd like to admit. Think more of him. Take a chance. Read a book. Right? There's some very good books out there. I mean, one classic one is by Alan Parker, who's a brilliant author. Sid Vicious, No One Is Innocent. That's a great book. I'd highly recommend that one. Vicious, The Art... Hang on, where is it? The Art of Dying Young. In fact, that's the picture I have on on the front of that cover. I've got tattooed on my back. There's, you know, there's a whole section in Clinton Hellion's Babylon's Burning, which is set about Sid. It's an absolute brilliant book. There's so many, so many. And another Alan Parker book, Sid Vicious, Too Fast to Live. And that is a brilliant, that's a brilliant way to finish it. Sid was too fast to live and too young to die. The flame of punk died on that day. Because really there was no one that was more suited and more aptly appointed to those four letters than Sid himself. John Simon Ritchie, or John Simon Beverly. A loss, sad, but it happened and that's the way it is. So think of him. Don't just pass over and think, yeah, waste of space, waste of humanity, because he wasn't. Think about what your concept of rock and roll is and that your spark of rock and roll, and it will all lead to the same passion and the same want. And he just vocalized it. He just visualized it. He was that flame. Burn bright, burn fast, burn young. Never could control it. He couldn't control it. So that's it, really. Thanks, Sid, man, for what you did give us those few moments. And I really hope that wherever you are now, man, you're living your best life. You're chatting to David Bowie. You're having a cheeky pint with Mark Boland. See, it's the end of the day. I'm recording this late at night. All your heroes, all of them. You're having a moment with Eddie Cochran. You know, he's going, I didn't mind your version of my song. It goes to show that his cover songs were all rock and roll songs of the 60s, not because they 50s, not because they were easy to play. It's because they were true rock and roll. Anyway, that's enough for me this week. I mean, two more links. As I said, if any of you out there are struggling, please do reach out to whoever you can. There's always someone to listen to. There's always someone out there for you. And there's always help. I know it doesn't feel like it. But, you know, when in doubt, put on some uplifting music that takes you into a different place. And it might remove you from those thoughts that might do more harm than good. Anyway, bye for now. Chat to you next week on probably more upbeat episode. Bye for now.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.